last time we spoke, we had a conversation about your health journey, which is a very interesting story in itself. So that podcast is available on our channels. But during that conversation, the subject of diet came up inevitably. And that creates, I think, an avenue for plenty of avenues for further discussion. So you've certainly tried a lot of different things over the years, and myself too, I'm not afraid to try anything that I think is going to give me some kind of improvement in how I feel or how I perform in the gym. And we both arrived at a diet that is largely carnivore. I believe you're stricter than I am. I think you've been doing it pretty strictly for about a year. While I've had various phases during that time of being more or less carnivore, I think I'm carnivore adjacent. I'll put that as my pronoun on LinkedIn. So it's been about a year for yourself. Do you want to describe perhaps what led you to it in the first place? That might be a good place to start.
Yes, certainly. Just as a sort of apologies, I've got a bit of a runny nose from a cold, so every now and then I'm going to be blowing my nose. Essentially, it happened last year, literally, our 13th of April, I've s officially started like a protein sparing modified fast. Essentially, my mum and dad had moved up to Newcastle. I was coming over to see them late at night. Mum didn't want me cooking dinner, and I was coming home from work, needed food, and I ended up eating cereal quite a lot because it didn't stink the house, the flat out. But very quickly, and we were going out for quite a lot of meals and restaurants as well because the flat wasn't ready. And literally within the space of 2 months, I'd put on 12 pounds in weight. So I'd gone from 12 stone to 12 stone 12. And I've had a lot of weight issues over the years. I go up and down very, very readily. And during lockdown, I'd lost a stone and a half, gone from 13 and a half to 12, but purely by managing my circadian rhythms. But I thought that'd take me so long. And I put on weight so rapidly, I was pretty down about it. So I'd started watching things about rapid weight loss, and I followed Keegan Smith on Uncom and through his ATG stuff. And he'd recommended for athleticism, a rapid way of losing weight was doing a protein sparing modified fast. I did a bit more research, realized that I'd actually had a whole book on it written by Lyle McDonald from about 10, 12 years beforehand. I did a bit of research on was rapid weight loss safe, etc. Because as a personal trainer, we'd always been taught no, it's not, or you put on the weight more rapidly. But actually, the more recent stuff that I found suggested that rapid weight loss did work well, and that people who did this were more motivated to stay, make the changes they needed to change, and lost more weight and maintained that weight loss for longer than those who went for steady weight loss. So I thought, what the heck, I'm going for it. And did this protein sparing modified fast, which was literally 800 calories worth of lean protein. So about 200 grams of protein, which I guess came to about a kilo of meat. Roughly lean meat each day. I was doing it at the time predominantly with chicken breast, which was pretty grim because I don't really like chicken breast. I understood that I would get initial weight loss very quickly through loss of muscle glycogen, the sugar stored in our muscles, and water with that. Actually, I lost my full 12 pounds that I gained within about 3 to 4 weeks. And during that time, I kept researching and came across these references to the carnivore diet from Jordan Peterson and Michaela Peterson. Joe Rogan interviews, and then Ben Patrick on ATG, Knees Over Toes guy, talked about his diet and how he was so ripped, and that was pretty much all meat with a plate of fruits late at night. Then I came across Paul Saladino, Sean Baker, Anthony Chaffee, loads of information about potentially, better health, better athletic performance in the long term, better mental health, which was quite intriguing. I've been looking at addiction stuff, and they'd suggested keto, and carnivore is a form of keto. So I decided to try it for about 30 days. It was going well at 30 days. Decided, well, let's go for 3 months. I joined Uncom, the sort of self-development group with Keegan. That's where I've met yourself. I did a specific fat loss protocol last September, which was about 5 6 months into it. Leaned down to about 11 or 12% body fat. I'm slightly above that now. My athletic performance, whilst it took a while, did get better when it dropped initially, but has regained and gone above where I was, and seems much more maintainable. So yeah, that was how I got into it, and it's been a year now. It will be a year in 2 days' time.
Yeah, so I think myself, it was a little different. It was more of a gradual transition. So I probably first heard about it through people like Sean Baker and Paul Saladino a good few years ago. And yeah, there's a number of people like that who are charismatic. They look good. They're great salesmen for the diet and lifestyle. And a good many of them are doctors, surgeons, so they have that level of credentials behind them, which perhaps adds a bit more weight to what they're saying, adds a little more authority. So I became interested in it, and I told myself, "Yeah, I'm going to do this, try it out." But I didn't commit straight away. There was something holding me back. Having said that, the diet that I was eating wasn't actually a million miles away. I had been steadily eating more protein and less of anything else. So when I did eventually commit to it, it wasn't a huge change for me. It wasn't like I went from a junk food diet to a strict carnivore diet overnight. So I got there gradually, really. During, let's say, the last couple of years, I've had a few phases where I've been pretty strict with it for, let's say, 4 weeks, maybe 8 weeks at a time. There's been some slight variations in there. Sometimes I've included small amounts of other food like dairy, or fruit, or dairy and fruit, and slightly different effects each time. The experience being a little bit different. I think we'll get into that a little bit more. So for yourself, over that year, it sounds like you were pretty strict with it. You got about 12 pounds of weight loss near the beginning.
So that took me down to the 12 stone, and then over the next, so that was by the probably midway through May, I was back down to 12 stone, and by the end of September, I was down to 10 stone 10. And that included the month of doing the lean countdown approach, Keegan's approach for fat loss, which again, pretty much is a this protein sparing modified fast, but we added in fat refeed days. And I was re really strict. I did on my fat refeed days on that add a tiny little bit of honey, just to make the fat taste more palatable, really. I was having cream sauces and stuff, but yeah, pretty strict for those first 5 6 months. I did have 2 or 3 days off, Father's Day, and then there was a day with a friend where I won a squash tournament, and I decided I'm going to celebrate with beers and a takeaway. And that was like part of an experiment, which was very enlightening, actually, and led to a few more questions about a lot of stuff about my whole life, really. But yeah, pretty strict. And then Christmas, I dabbled a bit more over Christmas, and in the new year, and I'm now sort of trying to get back stricter again, basically because the having been strict, it's like a total elimination diet. I don't know whether, and then you really notice what happens when you add things back in and the differences. And I've noticed for me personally, there are quite big differences in a lot of things when I add stuff back in. Did you notice anything like that with your experiences?
So people who know me probably think that I'm obsessive about my diet and that I'm really strict. And it could appear that way, but I honestly don't get many cravings for crap food. I'm not saying that I'm above cravings, but I've just eaten real food for so long. The idea of going to a chip shop or getting a McDonald's just does not appeal to me one bit. Sometimes I want to eat something sweet. Sometimes I'll have an adult beverage. I'm no stranger to ice cream. But the idea of eating like packaged junk or something from a takeaway, I just don't really get the urge to eat that. So when I've gone away from the carnivore diet, it's really been in terms of adding other things in that's still real food. So I went about halfway through a 2 year period, I decided to increase carbohydrates. I was looking at what Paul Saladino was talking about, and some people in the bioenergetic world, where there is actually quite a bit of similarity between what they're talking about and the carnivore world. They're still largely talking about eating whole foods and avoiding specifically some other foods. However, they're more in favor of eating quite high amounts of carbohydrate, particularly fruit. So I gave that a go for a little while. And that wasn't for me. That's probably a story in itself. But I think the point I'm trying to make here is I haven't gone to any great extremes during the last few years, really. My diet's mostly been whole foods. So I think if I did have takeaways and a beer, I'm definitely going to feel that. So everything that I do really is within that context of eating a whole food diet. And just one other thing that I think I should mention, which was part of my journey to getting towards trying this out, was at one point I decided to do an experiment that I just called a whole foods intuitive diet. So I decided to eat whatever I wanted, as much as I wanted, as long as it was whole real food, nothing with ingredients written on the side, nothing out of a packet. And that actually was what took me very close towards carnivore. So initially, I had
Interesting.
more dairy in there. Dairy tastes great, most people enjoy it. Had quite a bit of fruit. I did have more starches. I had sweet potatoes and rice and that type of thing. And the idea was to not have any preconceived ideas about what I should eat and just eat what I felt like my body was saying it wanted. So
That rings real bells with a story in ultra processed people about an experiment they did with babies, which maybe come back to later, because that's I think that's really, really important about using our intuition.
That has become my biggest guide now. And what I learned from that period was there were certain foods which you could argue are whole foods and natural foods, but for me had a bit of an addictive quality. So more sugary fruit, I found if I eat sugary fruit, I just want more and more of it. So things like bananas and plums, the higher sugar fruits. So still sugar, might be natural sugar, but it still has that addictive quality. I found the same with dairy. If I eat dairy, I want more dairy. If I cut it out for a couple of weeks, I just don't really fancy it anymore. To me, it's similar to chocolate. I think it has a kind of drug-like effect in that once you start, you want more and more of it. But cut it out for a little while, you go cold turkey, and its appeal reduces a great deal. So those couple of things, particularly fruit and dairy, I do moderate them, although I don't think they're the worst foods in the world. Personally, I moderate them because I feel like they affect the signals that I'm getting from my body in a way that other foods don't.
And I think that's an interesting point. I mean, conversely to you. I have been very strict with my diet over the last 10, 12 years because of the cancer that we talked about in the other podcast, but I have slipped in and out of going back to just full on, takeaways, anything I wanted, pizzas, Chinese, this, that, and the other. So my weight went from post-cancer 14 and a half stone down to 11, back up to 13 plus, slowly back to 12, back up to 13 to 14, and then back down post lockdown. And now it's like I say, it's around 11. I would get a lot of cravings. So typically through playing squash, that was my main sport, and I would come home from a squash club play or a match, absolutely craving a beer or chocolate to take away. I was too exhausted to eat, to cook, so I would go and buy Chinese takeaway, or I had a chocolate, I call it a chocolate shop. It was a news agent across the way from where I lived, and it was open till 10, so I'd dash home from squash club play so I could get in there and get the chocolate or a tub of ice cream. But within a month of being on this protein sparing modified fast and then onto carnivore, those cravings went, and I was to the extent I come out of my squash and I think all I want is a pint of soda water. I could go home and cook. It's really simple now. It's just like I will touch on what we'll talk about what we eat, but just put something in the air fryer. Even now, I will eat some raw mince. And I find that actually incredibly satisfying and almost calming as well. And it's so convenient. So, yeah, the cravings thing for me, that was one of the biggest effects. And having been someone who was nicknamed Belly, Pie Master, all of these things through the last 20 to 30 years since my time in university, I was just known for wanting eating all the time. Now I have one or two meals a day. And bizarrely, a bit like yourself, I miss the concept of the pleasure I used to get from those foods, but I don't crave those foods anymore. And actually, if I do have them, I have had them on a couple of occasions, and it's like that I've had quite bad responses to them. In many different ways, but I don't miss it anymore. But like yourself, if I introduced something sweet for a while, so Christmas was interesting. There were a few chocolate sweets, marzipans, and things that I wanted to try that had a real nostalgic meaning to me. And once I started eating them, I started having to have them every day. I dabble with Greek yogurt and a bit of honey and some nuts and seeds, which not strictly carnivore, but sometimes I feel like I need to get extra calories in because I haven't eaten enough, and that's an easier way for me to get it in because meat is so satiating. But as soon as I start having Greek yogurt and honey in the evening, next day I want it again.
For sure. Yeah.
Whereas when I cut it after a week or two of cutting it, I'm just with my meat, I'm happy, I eat it, I'm full, I don't want it. Then the next time I'm hungry, I want the meat again. But I'm not craving meat. It's difficult to explain. It's just like that's what I'm going to eat and I'm satisfied with it.
Yeah, when I
So
was very, when I was my strictest with it, I lost interest in pretty much everything else. I think why that might have changed was for me, doing a carnivore diet in the summer felt different to other times of year. So
okay.
when I tried to be strict in the summer, I'm not generally prone to sweet cravings, but I found I started to crave fruit, and it would be
Yeah.
mid-afternoon. I just wanted something sweet, particularly something like a juicy citrus fruit, a grapefruit, a mango, something
Yeah.
like that. But so eventually I cracked and thought, well, I may as well just have it. I think my body's telling me
Yeah.
something here, and I'm just in denial, trying to be really strict sticking to something that I'm starting to find uncomfortable. But I guess if you think about it logically, when does fruit grow? Fruit's available in the summer. I know mangoes
Yeah.
don't grow in this country, but
But your ethnic ancestral background probably is like mine, from a place where fruits would have been grown in the summer. You would have had those. No, I agree. Have you come across the Three Seasons diet?
I haven't, no.
So John Doyard talks about this. He's written a book about it. He wrote Body, Mind and Sport, was a nose breathing coach, Ayurvedic coach, and I came across this through a Facebook group I was on, which was health related stuff, and they talked about this seasonal idea. And exactly what you said, in the summer is when all your carbohydrate type stuff grows, and in winter, especially in the northern hemisphere, is when meat would be available, but there'd be very little plant food to eat. So you in the summer would be a good time to have your fruits and stuff, autumn maybe your greens that have grown, and then over winter have meat. And our physiology seems to be adapted for that, in that we seem to respond to that in the sunshine. That inspires that wanting, because we want to be more active. Vitamin D gets stored in the fat, so when you go to the meat in the winter, the what these people were saying on this Three Seasons diet, etc., was that they would go ketogenic essentially through this carnivore based diet, and then the vitamin D from your fat gets released, and that's how you get your vitamin D in winter, stuff like that. So there's very and you would we would be in tune with this one, because the environment gave us no other choice. We would be adapted to the environment, and we would be in touch with our body senses, both internal and external. Interesting what you said about that you did your experiment with whole foods, and how that might be very, very different if you ate processed foods, and the junk foods and stuff like that. I think it'd be very different outcome if you tried that.
I think our nutritional needs are not static. That's the conclusion that I've arrived at recently. Now, the carnivore diet has a great appeal to it because it's so simple. So many people are really confused about what they should be doing. So many different voices out there saying almost completely different things. It's really hard for the layman to understand. It's hard for people like us who are trainers, who have been reading and studying nutrition and experimenting on ourselves for decades. It's still hard for us to know what's going on fully. So when these charismatic guys come along and say, all you've got to do is eat meat and water, there's a certain sense of relief to that okay, I've found a simple answer. And that was certainly part of the appeal for me starting on it. But I do think it's an oversimplification. I do think that our needs change, as you've mentioned, through the seasons. They change week to week, day to day, based on stressors, our environment, so many factors. And where I've really arrived at now is developing that ability to listen to what you need. And I think if it's within a whole foods template, and maybe you could go a bit further and say, I'm going to keep it within a seasonal whole foods template and not eat bananas in December or something like that, if you really want to get into it. But if you're keeping it within whole foods, I feel like you're not going to go too far wrong. You're really, at this point, you're drilling down into details. But for the vast majority of people, if they were able to develop that intuition to listen to their body and just eat whole foods, that's a huge 80, 90% of their issues are going to go away. I'm confident in that.
I'd agree with that. I think it's probably a good time to just mention that study they talked about in ultra processed foods or ultra processed people, the book by Chris Van Tulleken, one of the twin doctors on TV. And it was a chapter about a doctor who basically did this experiment on babies, let them choose their own food. And the basis for it was that animals out in the wild, for instance, he talked about cows. Cows can't eat every grass out there, neither can sheep. and you can actually graze them in the same field because they will eat different food, so they don't compete for the same food. And he was saying that cows, they know which grass to eat. They'll try a bit and they'll get a sense of, no, that's not the right food. They'll move on to another plant until they find what they need. And I think our conscious brains over time, we've got this idea that we've developed knowledge and science and everything, and we've overridden all of those inner senses that we've had. But we also now have food and technology that overrides them, so we can create mixtures that weren't available in nature. Ice cream, pizza, all these sugars, starches, and fats with salt and sugar that seem to override our appetite regulation. But before all of that came along, we were likely to have regulated our appetite, or it would have been subconscious, like every other creature on the planet. So what she found with this experiment with the babies was that they had all sorts of different foods: meats, fish, seafood, organ meats, fruits, vegetables, a little, there was some salt, there was some olive oil, there was some butter as well. That was probably as processed as they got. And the nurses, the people caring for the babies, were trained not to influence the babies and the young children onto what they chose. There were children there with severe nutritional deficiencies, as well as healthy babies, I believe. And basically, these babies chose, they would just pick from plates, and then when they'd had enough, that was it. And through time, they would choose different foods. There was one baby who, for days on end, ate loads of tomatoes every day and then stopped for a period of time, several weeks, didn't eat any tomatoes, and then went back to eating tomatoes again. All of the babies were monitored nutritionally, and bizarrely, we might think, they complied, their nutrition complied with all the what we believe to be a nutritionally complete diet. And yet these babies had no rational, conscious view of what they needed. They were just relying on their intuition. And so if that can work with babies, why wouldn't it work with adults, given the appropriate environment? I think that's the trouble that most of us deal with, is that we don't live in an environment that supports that anymore, which is what's so difficult.
Yeah, if processed foods are in your diet, and these ultra highly palatable foods, things like pizza that you've mentioned, that have that mix of starch and fat and salt that we wouldn't typically find in nature, it can take a little while for you to get used to eating plainer foods, but your palate does adjust over time. But there's definitely a transition period. I know I said earlier that I don't really have the urge to eat those things. I certainly did for a while. It took a while to phase out. I'd still make myself a gluten-free pizza at home once a week because I still had that desire to eat those foods for quite a long time. I just made sort of healthier versions of things that are available, from a takeaway or something like that. And over time, it lessened the urge to eat that type of food lessened. But
Cool.
yeah, I
How
had heard
did
of
you find
the
it?
a similar story about I think it was about sheep in a field that were sticking their heads outside of the field, or in a field full of grass, and they're putting their heads through a fence to nibble a certain plant that's just out of their reach. And the farmer was asked why they're doing that, and he answered, they know what they need. If there's something over there that's just out their reach, there's a reason for them going for that. They know what they need at any given time, and even when they have some type of illness, they seem to know which types of grass, which may all look the same to us, they seem to know which ones to avoid and which ones to go for, and can recover themselves.
And I think that's a real big thing, because I think we've gone through a stage where we've become this very patriarchal, hierarchical society where what we're supposed to do is filter down from above and more centrally, whereas it used to be sort of like through families and your elders, and then potentially the business world in recent years has got more involved, and so there are other agendas are driving us. But very much we live in a society where we assume conscious knowledge is more important than subconscious knowledge. This might sound a bit abstract, but what we've read in the book, is like we know what we should eat, apparently, how many calories, the RDAs for minerals and vitamins, etc. But I don't believe when we dig deeply into that, actually, that we do know that. And as you say, our needs are dynamic. And I think that's really well illustrated when you're ill. The types of foods you want to eat when you're ill are very different to those when you're feeling fit and healthy and sprightly. Like you say, you've noticed in summer you wanted to eat differently to winter. So if you coach people, how would you encourage them to explore this type of stuff?
Yeah, I really think that in coaching, you have to meet people where they are. Nobody has the exact right diet that they can prescribe for anybody else. I think all you can do is give people principles, and that person has to be engaged enough to take on the challenge of figuring out what works for them. Too many people want a cookie cutter solution. And it's never that simple. Yeah, you can get progress if your diet's not that great and somebody shows you something that's a little better, then you can make progress. But it's not static, it changes from time to time and it's individual. So if I'm coaching somebody, I coach people on various aspects of health, movement, nutrition, and some lifestyle and mindset tools as well. But nutrition is definitely the hardest. There's a saying, isn't there? I think it goes something along the lines of it's easier to get a man to change his religion than it is to change his diet. I think that's Margaret Mead, and it's very, very true. So my approach is to meet people where they are, find out what they're doing, find out what problems that they're having, and just try to give them one or two habit changes at a time that's going to move them in a better direction. Now, some people are early adopters. I think people like you and I, who are in the fitness world, health world, we probably fall into that bracket of early adopters, where if we see a new idea and we find it credible enough that it's going to give us some kind of benefit, we just jump straight in and try it out on ourselves. But it's a minority of the population that will do that. So if it's not one of those people, and it's about understanding what kind of person you're working with, because I have had clients who are willing to completely reboot what they're doing and jump into something new. But the majority I find, it's making small, manageable, incremental changes, and it's a slow process.
I mean, when people ask me about, what I'm doing, because I think what it was very noticeable to all of the people around me, especially at the Swash Club, their first response is, "Oh, well, I couldn't do that." I would suggest, yeah, that initially that's probably the case for a lot of people, because it goes against one, probably the last 50 years of what we've been told about food. Red meat is associated with cancer and heart disease and all sorts of other stuff. Like you said, you and I both did a lot of research into it, and I think that was one thing I think is important to understand, that a lot of the research about food that we've had over the last 50 years has been comparing diets to a standard, what they used to call a standard American diet or an ultra processed food diet. And so going, so like for instance, when I had cancer and I went vegetarian for a couple of years afterwards, because that was pretty much all the information I could find was actually, that's what you need to do. And I did pretty well on it. But what I found over time that it, I just didn't want to do that the whole time. But interestingly now, well, back then ketogenic diets were being researched with cancer, and carnivore is a form of ketogenic diet. And I think you introduced me to Paleo Medicina, which they treat cancer with an animal-based diet, which I find absolutely fascinating. And what I did find reading around the research, the books, the Paul Saladino book, even though he now has moved away from what he's written in there, I found that very convincing about a lot of things. He answered a lot of the questions which I felt the from the plant-based side of things weren't as clear, that their arguments weren't as robust for me personally. Likewise with Sean Baker's book. But like yourself, I'm not sure meat and water for the rest of my life is what I can do. And I think there are needs, and certainly I found seafood is a big thing to come in there. Every now and then I will have fruit or a bit of fresh salad and things like that, because my friends will eat it and I think, oh, that looks really nice, I'll try a bit of that. And sometimes it's just, yeah, have that, like you say, listen to your body. Did you one thing that was really interesting for me was is digestion. In terms of throughout my life, I've in had an awful lot of bloating, wind. I mean, we used to, my ex-wife and I used to joke about how the duvet was like a magic flying duvet, because it would just be floating with all the hot air being produced below it at night. The number of times I would need to go for basically solid toilet breaks, I would need to go 3 or 4 times a day. I would use a ton of toilet paper. When I followed my anti-cancer protocol, that all changed. So that was primarily vegetarian with a little bit of dairy and cottage cheese. And on carnivore, it's changed dramatically as well. And actually, when I've done strict carnivore, my digestion, I've produced a minimal amount of stools, used a minimum amount of toilet paper. So maybe using the toilet at most once a day for stools. But often maybe once every 2 days. Other people are, I've heard of maybe go once a week. It's not like that for me. But when I eat, as soon as I start eating plant foods, I need to go 2 or 3 times a day, which I found very interesting. What's your experience on
Oh well, my fa one of my favorite subjects.
that?
What led me, I think, to really digging into nutrition in the first place was in my mid-20s, I started to have pretty bad digestive issues. It seemed like I was spending half of my day in the bathroom. And this happened quite suddenly, it came on quite suddenly. There were probably a few things that led up to it. I was on a long course of antibiotics, probably way too long, basically for acne. Didn't have very
All
severe
right.
acne, but you're in your 20s, you can be obviously concerned about what you look like. And
Yes,
I was prescribed some by a GP, and I was able to just go and get a repeat prescription from the reception of the GP office. Whenever I ran out, and I think I did that for at least 2 years. I don't know what type of antibiotics there were now, because this is going back quite a long time. But I think it was a broad spectrum antibiotic, which I took every day for about 2 years, not with really any supervision until I just stopped of my own accord. So shortly after that time, when I started to have digestive issues, my guess is that I probably nuked my internal gut flora completely. And it seemed like I was intolerant to everything. So this went on for years, and I went through all the phases of different elimination diets, eliminating gluten, eliminating grains, eliminating everything you can imagine, food diaries, all sorts. And I have to be honest, I still haven't fully resolved those issues, but I am a lot better.
Yeah.
So I think over the last 6 months or so, I've had some very interesting feedback from my experiences. So things were better on carnivore, but not perfect. So for me, I do feel better with some plant food, preferably some kind of low starch, low sugar vegetables, occasionally. I might go for a week without having any, might go for 2, 3 weeks without having any. And then I might have a phase of a couple of weeks where I'm having it every day. So it seems to be not a completely static thing. Now, diet isn't the only thing that affects our gut. That's one thing I know for sure. Stress is a huge factor. And the way that I arrived at that was actually after a long period of doing elimination diets, writing notes, obsessively trying to figure out what was causing me problems, and then eventually giving up over a Christmas break and just thinking, I can't be bothered with this anymore. It's not working anyway. I've got 2 weeks off work. I'm just going to relax with my family, eat whatever I want. And during that 2 weeks, I had no digestive trouble whatsoever. I was eating cakes, I was eating all sorts, all the things I've been cutting out, and I was fine. And I think it was just that sustained period of relaxation. So,
I think that's massive what you were saying there, because I mean you mentioned the gut flora, gut biome. I mean, I guess people who may get to listen to this or are listening will have some understanding of that. But as you say, many different things can affect that gut biome, stress being one of them. Exercise is another one. So I did a course with Hack Your Gut, circadian retraining program, and according to the guy on that, 25% of your gut diversity was due down to your level of aerobic fitness,
That's
which
it.
I found very, very interesting. And then when you look at now, people are talking about what are the strongest predictors of longevity, and VO2 max closely followed by strength. So, you know, we know we've been told that we need a healthy gut biome to be healthy, and that is being, you know, this idea of aerobic fitness supporting that gut biome is supported by VO2 max now being a strong predictor of your longevity and your health and your longevity. Circadian rhythms, again, the eating window. So I dare say you'll have dabbled or done on a more consistent basis some form of fasting or intermittent fasting or time restricted eating, as it's sometimes called. I know I certainly have, and even just managing that will, you'll have gut flora that rely on food coming in during the day, and then there'll be gut flora that rely on using the body's own resources at night when food is no longer coming in. So you have this sort of like contrasting sets of gut bacteria which can both thrive. But if we eat too much and for too long, so say we eat for 15, 16 hours in a day, then those gut bacteria that would feed on our body overnight, they tend to get overwhelmed, is my basic understanding of that. So again, you don't get this nice diverse set of gut bacteria. Stress, again, the difference between being stressed, the hormonal and neuro, the chemical makeup of our bodies during stressful periods compared to non-stressful periods, getting good sleep, all of these things will have an impact on that.
For sure.
I wonder, you know, you we're going back to the sheep as well, and this is just a weird diversion here. How do we know what generates our desire for food? And in ultra processed people, he that Van Tulleken intimates that cows, for instance, might actually be food collectors for the bacteria within them. So it's actually the bacteria directing what the cow is going to eat by communicating with the brain through the creation of neurochemicals, which gut bacteria can do. And that drives the cows to eat the right food. And I would suggest there's a similar thing going on with humans when we've got a certain set of bacteria that's driving us to eat certain foods. And then those bacteria that when we're stressed that proliferate will be driving us to try and find those stress relieving foods, which may well be the sugars, the fats combined, etc. But that's another discussion about whether, what it is to be human, because I think we've not really understood the role of gut bacteria. But I think that's worth another talk about that.
It seems very plausible to me. I think we will probably have to wrap this up soon. Maybe a good place for us to finish off. And I think we could certainly come back to this subject again. As there's plenty more for us to talk about, but perhaps a good place for us to finish for today might be, what does your diet look like on a day to day at the moment?
Okay, so as a whole, I'd just like to add that maybe a few and to finish off on what we might talk about in future, a few questions that were raised for me during this last year. But yeah, in terms of my daily diet, I basically will have some form of beef in the mornings, either a steak or more typically mince now because of the cost. But also, I actually believe mince, because it'll have more gristle and fat and collagen and stuff, has a better mix of amino acids and proteins in it than just pure muscle meat. I'll often have eggs and bacon with that. And I won't have that early on in breakfast. I tend to have that later on, probably 11, 12 o'clock at the earliest. Then I'll have similar in the evening. Yeah, it seems very, very boring. But I'll maybe have prawns. I'll have Parma ham to maybe season it as well. And I've found a way. I put Parma ham in the air fryer, and that crisps it. And then I crumble it, and that's like a nice seasoning. But yeah, basically some form of meat, and with eggs. And then sometimes some cheese. And like I say, at the moment, I'm going through a phase of having Greek yogurt with honey and some maybe some nuts and seeds, which isn't strict carnivore at all. But yeah, that would be my daily food at the moment. What about you?
Ground beef, minced beef is the cornerstone. I find it incredibly satisfying. It's, the price is reasonable. I like the fattier beef. I think that's what you go for as well. So 20% fat. Typically a packet's around 500 grams, around a pound. And I know if I have that, I'm not going to need to eat for several hours. For me, I will get a little bored if I do that twice a day, and that for me is probably a little bit more food than I actually need. Probably my second meal is going to be slightly smaller, and just for variety, I eat other meats with my for my other meal. And I'm a big fan of oily fish, so salmon, mackerel, eggs, egg yolks. Right, really, I don't really eat egg whites, because I just don't get on with those.
So I've started bringing in a bit of smoked salmon with mine as well, stuff like that. I have the occasional tin of mackerel. I prawns and mussels are things I tend to have a lot with it as well. And yeah, like yourself, if I had the mince twice a day, probably get bored with that. I buy a lot of chuck steak, and we'll either just put that in the air fryer, or I'll make a stock with it where I will actually add carrots and onions to the stock, but basically braise the steak, and it's lovely. It's fatty. I'm actually just about set up because the squash season is over. I've just bought myself some 5% mince for a couple of days to do a little bit of leaning out again, just as an experiment again. But
Bone broth is in there as well for me. I make a slow cooker batch of bone broth once a week, and
yeah,
similar
that's
to you with the
nice.
vegetables, carrots, onions, and some sauerkraut. Not really much fruit at the moment, not really feeling the urge to eat fruit. I have some raw honey. Dairy is my weakness. Like you, I can once I get started on that Greek yogurt, I want it every day. So I try not to have it too
Yeah,
often.
yeah. So maybe a subject for another time, next time, like a few things like on the nutrition side, coffee or not, with all of this. I've got some interesting experiences regarding the coffee. And then things I'd like to maybe talk about, questions I've had, because I play team squash, is like, how can you play squash on next to zero carbs? So I think that was an interesting journey over the last year that we could maybe talk about. I don't know if you have any athletic
For sure.
experiences in terms of your mental and physical performance and how that has been affected by it, because I think that's quite important as well, is that something I'd like to talk about. And the other big thing for me, which we haven't really touched upon in this, is the impact on mental health. And that there's a lot there that I've experienced and I've read about as well, would like to talk about going forward.
Yeah, there's plenty of the subjects that we haven't got into yet. There's the long-term implications of doing this. So I
Yeah.
think all of these things we can try to unpack in future conversations.
Brilliant. Cool. So, what are you having for dinner tonight?
I've eaten earlier on. I had my meal as described, pound of fatty beef mince and a few vegetables, and probably won't need to eat again until tomorrow.
So we're going out for a meal, and so this is one of the difficulties of carnivore, is the social aspect of it. But we're going to a local Indian restaurant, and what I will tend to do there, I will have lamb chops for starters. They're basically grilled with some spicing, maybe a marinade. I'll sometimes do the tikka platters. I will typically have a meat curry. And we'll eat some of the sauce with it, but I won't have anything else with it. And often what I do before I go out is I might have some mince, just to sort of pad myself out a little bit, so I don't need to eat too much at the restaurant.
Yeah, I
But
have
yeah.
taken that tactic as well, because if you're really hungry, you're much more likely to make a decision you're not happy with later on.
Yes. Excellent. Well, brilliant. Yeah, well, it's coming up near 7 o'clock now, so that's the time we said we'd wrap it
Yeah.
up.
All right then, mate.
So
Right, that was
thanks a
great.
lot.
Thanks for your time. Let's
Yeah,
do this again soon.
cheers.